Think of a lot worse places to be, like down in the street, or down in the sewer, or even on the end of a skewer.
Hi, it's Tori DeVito. In every family, small conversations can make a big impact. Like when my dad shared his experiences as an alcoholic.
Your honesty about that part of your life gave me a sense of integrity that I wanted to uphold in my own life.
I wanted you to know from someone who's been in recovery more than 30 years now that hard work is what creates success, not alcohol or other drugs. I said it a lot, and I'm glad you took it to heart.
Talk, they hear you. For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
WRCT in sound from way out.
Yeah. the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
I think it's important not to celebrate prematurely the student loan debt forgiveness that has been announced by Joe Biden. And the reason I say that is that it is looking slightly more plausible that that student loan debt forgiveness could end up blocked. Now, earlier in the week, we discussed this on the bonus show. And when we talked about it on the bonus show.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money. But everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Among other things, one of the things that came up is that disgusting Republican Senator Ted Cruz is working on blocking it. And one of the things that came up in our discussion about Ted Cruz is that even Ted Cruz was admitting he isn't totally clear on who could bring a lawsuit. Could it be a taxpayer who says, hey, $2,100 supposedly of my tax money is being used to pay off someone's student loans or to forgive someone's student loans, and that hurts me, so I'm filing a lawsuit. Would a random taxpayer have standing? What about someone who just is outside of the income range for forgiveness? Like if you make $126,000 instead of $125,000, it's not clear. But increasingly, it seems as though it is at least plausible that the plan could be blocked. Arizona's Republican Attorney General said he and others are looking at bringing a legal challenge to Joe Biden's plan for the cancellation of student debt. If we can bring a challenge, we will bring a challenge, he said to CNBC in an interview on Tuesday. The state's Republican Attorney General said he and others are looking to bring a challenge. And GOP attorneys general from Missouri and Texas, as well as Ted Cruz, who I already mentioned, all are figuring out, how might we be able to block Joe Biden's plan? And this is causing understandable anxiety for the tens of millions that stand to benefit from this plan. Now, as CNBC writes, a drawn out legal challenge would threaten to throw the fate of an estimated 43 million people's debts into limbo for the foreseeable future. And the issue could make its way to the Supreme Court. Lawrence Tribe, Harvard law professor, wrote, the uncertainty for borrowers in the meantime is considerable. No lawsuits have yet been filed, but it looks like they want to do it sooner than later. So there's a couple of different things here that I think are important. One is, yes, it is completely plausible at this point, based on all of the legal opinions I've read, it is plausible that this could be tied up for years. Now, whether ultimately it will be found to be within Joe Biden's purview and something he can do and something that's legal and something that can be done, I don't know. But if it gets tied up for years before any forgiveness is done, that's still going to be very bad for 43 million borrowers. That's number one. Number two, this also could backfire on Republicans. We have seen for months now the chances for Democrats in the House and Senate tick up and up and up. Slowly, yes, but they have ticked up and up and up. And part of that is on the backs of the overturning of Roe v. Wade, much celebrated by many Republican officials, not popular with the American public. Part of it has been Republican inaction on gun safety. And we know from polling that this level, this degree of student loan debt forgiveness that has been offered is quite popular with the American people. So while indeed it is something Republicans might be able to hold up, it also appears to be something that Republicans should be cautious about holding up, because it does not seem as though the American people actually want it stopped. But at this point, it is getting enough momentum behind it, the block the forgiveness movement, that it would be weird not to mention the fact that it is not a complete and total foregone conclusion. Following up on yesterday's story that former Trump aide and Breitbart propagandist Stephen Bannon is being indicted again for his Build the Wall scam. It has happened. Yesterday, Stephen Bannon did indeed surrender to the Manhattan District Attorney's office. He made quite a scene. Here is Bannon showing up and he starts screaming, and then someone in the crowd is screaming, and it's just a complete and total mess.
This is an irony. On the very day the mayor of this city has a delegation down on the border, they're persecuting people here. They're trying to stop on the border. 60 days of the day.
So Bannon yelling about the border, a bystander yelling, "Stop hurting America." What a mess.
60 days. 60 days.
Take a step back.
Take a step back.
60 days. You greasy grifter, I like. I have to tell you that I like.
Stop hurting America, you greasy two-bit grifter.
Two-bit, I agree with as well. Now, if you don't remember what this is all about, Steve Bannon and a guy named Brian Kolfage were raising money to build their own wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. A complete and total absurdity, an obvious scam, and indeed it was. Here's just 20 seconds, because this is all I can take, from when they did this wall-a-thon.
Stephen K. Bannon and Brian Kolfage.
Welcome back. This is Stephen K. Bannon. We're off the coast of Saint-Tropez in southern France in the Mediterranean. We're on the million-dollar yacht.
Yeah.
Brian Kolfage. And Brian Kolfage, he took all that money from Build the Wall. No, we're actually in Sunland Park, New Mexico.
Well, it turns out that they really did abscond with the money. Brian Kolfage did. And it's beyond parody that this is now where we are. Steve Bannon was pardoned by Donald Trump on the federal charges for the Build the Wall scam. That pardon, presidential pardons, don't apply to state charges. These are now state charges in the state of New York. And here it goes all over again. One other just really funny note, adding stupidity to absurdity. Steve Bannon, when surrendering yesterday, did yell out, "Trump won." I mean, these people are parodies of themselves.
Trump won. Biden's illegitimate.
This.
Oh, God, these people are pathetic. So we'll follow the trial, and there is no presidential pardon coming this time. And that will be very interesting to see. One of the questions that is increasingly being asked about the legal defense being mounted after the FBI raid of Mar-a-Lago to get all those documents back from Donald Trump is, are Trump's lawyers going to use the same stupid arguments that they're making on TV when it comes to courts of law? Because if they do, it's going to be very embarrassing for them. I'm going to give you one such example. Here is Trump attorney Christina Bobb, who was on Newsmax 2 days ago, I believe it was. And she started making the case that the raid was illegal and that it's unconstitutional and that privileged documents were taken. It's a very dumb argument. Is she willing to make it in court, or do they only make these arguments for the court of public opinion on TV?
I don't know that anything about this raid was legal, but they did take attorney-client documents, and we know that because in the receipt of property that they gave us, they actually gave us two separate receipts of property. One of them is a shorter list. I think it only has about 5 or 6 items on it, and then you've got the other one that has the, I don't know, 20 or so items on it. And the shorter list, which doesn't explain that it's privileged information, they just happened to tell me that when they gave me the receipt. They said this is privileged information, that, you know, we're handling it differently. You know, we'll work out with the lawyers how to handle it. But of course, you know, they write out classified information on the one list, and then when they take something that is questionable and the public won't like, they leave that off of the list and just tell me. So I think it's a lot of gamesmanship. I think what they did is wrong. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. And I think they have a lot of explaining to do.
Now, If you, I've read a couple of legal opinions about this and other arguments that are being made by Trump's legal team of Habba Bob. It's Alina Habba and Christina Bob. Lawyers are basically laughing, like saying, OK, sure, you can say that on TV to try to convince people that what took place was wrong. But these are not really arguments for court. And it's very similar to what happened with Cassidy Hutchinson. Similar, not exactly the same. Remember that Cassidy Hutchinson was this aide to Trump's former chief of staff, Mark Meadows. And she testified under oath before the January 6th committee in the House of Representatives. And under oath, she made a number of assertions about Secret Service, about Trump's desires on the day of the riots, and on and on and on. Immediately after that, you heard media reports of Secret Service agents supposedly claiming that Cassidy Hutchinson was lying and saying they'd be willing to give the true side of the story. And then they never did. And they were invited and they were welcomed. And the door was wide open from the House of Representatives for those Secret Service agents and others who said, Cassidy Hutchinson, not Christina Bob, Cassidy Hutchinson is lying, to come in and make those claims under oath. And they never did. And often a strategy is, well, we don't want to lie under oath, so we will lie in the court of public opinion. We will lie in the media. And then as consumers, we have to think and say, OK, Cassidy Hutchinson was under oath in the House of Representatives. All of these other media statements are not under oath, and we're not even hearing it directly from the horse's mouth. Oftentimes, they are reports of statements that are being made. Let's not consider that equivalent. And so when we think about, oh, the legality of the search warrant, everything we know factually, looking at the search warrant, the affidavit, knowing that it was signed off on by Merrick Garland, knowing that it was signed off on by Christopher Wray, the FBI director selected by Donald Trump, knowing it was signed off on by a judge, that's substantive reason to believe that the raid was perfectly legal. You then have a lawyer on TV saying it was illegal and unconstitutional. OK, well, these are not equivalent. Make that argument in court is what Christina Bob should do. My guess is that that's not where they're going to be bringing this argument. I want to remind you once again that on 9/19, we are doing our 9/19 David Pakman Show membership special. It will be 19 themed. And if you've been thinking, well, maybe I'll dabble in membership, a little bit of membership, never hurt anybody. You can get on my mailing list at davidpakman.com. And then on the morning of 9/19, like a phoenix rising over the horizon, you will receive an email telling you exactly how to take advantage of this great membership special. In the meantime, let me know on Twitter at dpakman, will Trump's lawyers make these silly arguments in a court, or are they only willing to make them on TV? The David Pakman Show is, of course, a community supported program which depends on your support through something we call the membership program. You can sign up at joinpakman.com today. You can also wait until 9/19 for the 19 themed membership special. If you'd like to be notified of that, you can get on my mailing list at davidpakman.com. And then on 9/19, you will learn about the 9/19 membership special, which will be absolutely fantastic. Let's take some calls from people in the audience. We do this via Discord at davidpakman.com/discord. As a reminder, if you are in the Discord waiting to talk to me, your nickname should be your name and where you're calling from. Anything else, including name only or nicknames or usernames, you are unfortunately going to get skipped over. The requirement for the format is name and where you're calling from in some order, in some order. Like, for example, Jay from New Jersey. Let's go first to Jay from New Jersey. Jay, welcome.
Hey, David.
How are you?
My question is,
yes,
how do you justify eating meat, dairy, and eggs?
Who do I have to justify it to?
Well, when there's a victim involved, wouldn't you have to justify it to them?
I don't know. Is that, if you perceive that there are victims, every victim gets an explanation? I don't even know what you're saying.
Well, yeah. So like if someone decides to eat meat, dairy, and eggs,
yeah,
and if animals are dying for that decision,
yeah,
that's being made over and over again, do you feel like you could justify making that decision to that victim who has to suffer and die for it?
Like, for example, when I have my cappuccino, could I go to a cow and say, tell the cow why I'm drinking their milk, for example?
Yeah, like that cow who had to endure multiple pregnancies and then be separated from their child. And then, of course, if the child is a male, the males in the dairy industry almost always, well, they always get separated on the first day of life. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they're killed on the first or second day of life. And this process will happen over and over again to the mother cows, like several times until they can no longer produce milk any longer. And then they'll ultimately get sent to the slaughterhouse. So yeah, like in this scenario that you're painting, like with the cappuccino, do you think that there is a moral justification for consuming animal products if it's not a necessity, if we could just be using plant-based alternatives instead?
So the problem I have with this entire framing is that it's so absolutist and narrow, and it's not really like the way the world actually works. So for example, sometimes you follow these things to their logical conclusion. Like, I've read a lot about this, and hopefully you'll indulge me for a moment. If we say, okay, eliminate all animal products whatsoever, great. So that now puts an incredible, incredible strain on a handful of crops, which now need to be grown in dramatically larger quantities in order to replace all of those animal products. This creates absolutely massive monoculture farms, which are absolutely terrible for the environment. Many of these monocultures require absolutely bonkers amounts of water in order to generate equivalent amounts of, for example, protein. The water use also leads to many, many animals dying, everything from mice to, you know, all sorts of other things. And so we can do the entire thing that I gather is what you would consider to be morally right, and then we would still end up killing so many animals by virtue of how we restructure and reorganize what humans eat. Are we really better off by killing different animals through drought and monoculture, et cetera? I mean, I don't know. You tell me.
So
how do you justify it to them?
I would be interested in responding to that counterpoint that you brought up, but you did kind of not answer the question I asked, David.
The answer to my question is, I don't know what I would tell a cow. I've never spoken to a cow, so I don't know. But what I'm telling you is, it's the type of question that's really just a black hole. It doesn't really go anywhere in terms of answering the broader questions about how would we feed the planet on five monoculture crops that would have to be exploded, you know, 1,000,000% in order to replace all the animal products. You're not answering that question to me, which is okay too.
Okay.
What I'm telling you is your framing is arbitrarily narrow and sort of myopic.
Well, I can respond to that counterpoint that you bring up.
Okay.
But I do want to say that, you know, about the meat, dairy, and egg industry, like, it is like terribly, terribly cruel, the standard practices of meat, dairy, and eggs. So
yeah, I'm with you right there. I'm with you right there. The standard practices are horrible. What I do is,
I
eat very little red meat, for example. And when I do, I try to know exactly what farm is it coming from, where I could drive and see what are the conditions. I think that, like, for example, I'm on pasture free stuff where I know exactly where it's coming from. You know, I'm doing certain things for myself, but I agree with you. The standard practices are terrible. You and I are on the same page.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And then just to touch on like the resource intensive subject that you brought up.
Yeah.
So actually, when you really look into the amount of resources required that it takes to produce like raise livestock and breed these animals and then raise them to slaughter weight for meat and then also for dairy and eggs. When you look at how much water and crops and resources are needed for all these different kind of animal products,
yes,
it is just like unbelievably intensive on the environment. And
you're absolutely just, right. You're absolutely right. Crops.
Like if you've ever seen Cowspiracy, like they that's a documentary for you.
Yeah,
on Netflix,
I'm familiar with it. Like, Cowspiracy, I saw it, and so Cowspiracy is fine, but it's also lacking a lot of context and information. What you also have to consider is if we replace all of those products, what are they replaced with to meet certain caloric needs? It ends up being a very small number of things that can do it, which generates monocultures. That's very bad for the environment in new and other ways. Jay, I got to run. I've given you almost 10 minutes. I know we're not going to agree. Okay.
Just one more. I just want to say, like, okay, about the amount of crops, like, it's always less crops to eat a plant-based diet. That's first of all. So if you want to talk about crop deaths, there'll always be less crop-related deaths on a plant-based diet. But you still haven't answered the question, how do you justify eating meat, dairy, and eggs when there is a victim involved? And you said that
I'd have to think about how I talk to the cow, Jay. I told you, I think that those questions are philosophical.
Because I want to talk on the cow's behalf. The cows are dying. For the decision to put the
Jay,
milk in your
I've given you more time than I give anybody. I got to let you go, okay?
All right, well, think about it, David. Thanks
for taking
my— All
right, I'll think about that. Thank you. Boy, see, this is why I tend— when I saw the user was Jay Vegan, I almost got away from it. But I do regret that. I do regret that. Let's go to Christian from California. Christian, welcome. Christian from California, welcome.
Can you hear me okay, David?
Yes, I can.
So I'm actually calling you from the campus of my school right now, and I'm just wondering, what exactly do you think is, you know, how Biden just forgave some student loan debt? What do you see as, like, the long-term solution to, like, how college is becoming more and more unaffordable?
The long-term solution is it's not going to be just forgiving some debt. The long-term solution is going to be something has to put some combination of downward pressure on the educational costs and upward pressure on wages so that they are in line in a way that makes a lot more sense. And unfortunately, I don't really see a clear path to that right now. I do think free community college for 2 years for an associate's degree would do some of it. So if people had the option of paying for 4 years at an expensive school or doing your first 2 years for free at community college and then only doing 2 years at the expensive 4-year school, your junior and senior year to finish out your 4-year degree, I think that that would put significant downward pressure on what the 4-year schools are able to charge, for example. I know this one isn't popular with a lot of people, but if it were a little more difficult to just get a student loan to cover your entire education. Now, by more difficult, I mean, maybe it has to be tied to something that makes it more in line with the expected wages for that degree or something. I don't know. It's difficult. That might put downward pressure on education costs, but it's very difficult. But I don't believe the solution is forgiving a little bit of debt here and there, or even forgiving all of it, because those are basically licenses for colleges to charge whatever the hell they want.
Was it always sort of this easy? I mean, like, I don't know how long federal student loans have been around, but have they always been so accessible to, like, just about anyone who wants to, I mean, sign up for one?
No, but they also weren't as in demand, because there was a time during which you could kind of, like, work your way through college. The idea of that is kind of absurd at this point in time. So they've become more accessible as they've become more in demand. So it's been both.
Right. I have a patient at a clinic I work at who says she went to Berkeley in the 60s and was able to pay for it working part time, which is insane to think of now. But
Tom Hartman, who's a talk radio host on the left, he talks about how his wife, Louise, I believe it's that she was able to basically waitress through college and pay for it and come out with, I think it's almost no debt.
Wow, that's crazy to think about. All right, David, thank you so much for your time and taking my call.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for the question. Yeah, listen, the student loan debt forgiveness alone is not the solution to the problem. That's for damn sure. Let's go next to Mark from Los Angeles. Mark, welcome. You guys are getting a crazy heat wave, right? Oh, boy. Mark from Los Angeles, you were on the air. Welcome, Mark.
Hello? Hello?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, hey. Hi.
Hi.
Sorry, I freaked out for a second there with the... I wanted to compliment you because I thought that your interview with the conspiracy theory guy.
Mike Cargile.
That was amazing.
It was crazy.
I was like, wow.
Mark, but Mike Pillow was so triggered by that interview that he sent dozens of messages on Facebook in the comments to that interview to my viewers and to me.
He probably related to the ideas and thought that this man, this clearly very rational thinker, was
yes,
being
exactly
unfairly smeared by you.
Right.
Speaking of conspiracy theories, I was wondering, have you heard of Birds Aren't Real?
Yes, absolutely.
Have you ever thought of interviewing those guys? They're
no,
so hilarious.
I mean, it's satire, and we don't, you know, the couple times we've done satirical interviews on the show, they don't go well because half the audience doesn't get that it's satire, and then the other half does and thinks it's not really that interesting. So that's why we usually don't do the satire interviews. I did interview, what's the name of the candidate who puts the boot on his head and promises people free ponies? You know who I'm talking about?
I've never heard that before in my life, and that sounds hilarious.
Hold on. Candidate, free pony, boot on head. What's the guy's name? Okay, hold on. Here it is. His name is Vermin Supreme. I interviewed him, and like he says it's not satirical, but like, if it's not satirical, then he's nuts. Yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't seem to fit the show.
Okay. The funny thing is I don't know if you saw the 60 Minutes interview that was really great.
No.
They got covered on 60 Minutes, which is a big step for them. But
that's huge.
Yeah. When I saw this, I was like, I have to have a shirt.
Right.
I must have a shirt. And so I put the shirt on, and I work with a lot of people who, some of them have conspiracy theories, and literally I'm going and they're reading it like, birds aren't real. And they ask, and I'm telling them, yeah, you know, birds aren't real. Have you noticed like the left wing and the right wing, you know, and presidents speak to people to tweet and they land on power lines. Those power lines are just recharging stations for all the birds. And
right.
People believe it. It's hilarious.
Well, Mark, it sounds like quite a party, but we'll look into it for sure.
One more question?
Sure.
You've used the term, and I love it. What is it? Shot out of a cannon before.
Yeah.
This person shot out of a cannon. Where do you get that from? It sounds like something like a parent would say about a child or something like that.
You know, I think I got it from Howard Stern.
Really?
I for some reason, I feel like I haven't listened to him for years, but I feel like it's something he would sometimes say when, you know, someone would come in like Elegant Elliot Offen and he'd be shot out of a cannon.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get it. Because it just, to me, it sounds like something like a parent would, you've come in here from school shot out of a cannon. Calm down. Yeah.
Well, listen, Mark, you're shot out of a cannon and I'm up against the break, so I'm going to let you go. Okay.
All right. Have a good one. Thank you so much. I love your show.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Mark from LA. We're going to take a quick break and then go right back to the phones. If you're holding, don't hang up because there will be more opportunities to chat in just a moment. Let's get back to the phones and hear from the most important people in the David Pakman Show universe, the audience. Let's go to, I don't know. How about Ramiro from Indiana? Welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hey, I had a quick question on, comparing the U.S. executive branch and the way the system works in Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
So the vice president, that they had the quote-unquote assassination attempt recently, So she had been the president before.
Yep.
So in their system, she can become the – I'm sorry. Yeah, she was the president. She can become the vice president because here, from my understanding, like Barack Obama would not be able to be the vice president, correct?
So I don't remember the answer to that. In the U.S., can if you've been president – you know, I think you can be vice president, but if the president were to die, it would skip to the Speaker of the House. Maybe people can fact check me on that. Yeah, because at one point there was the idea of Biden should pick Obama as his VP.
Obama. I didn't know that was actually an option, but yeah, I'll have to look in on that. That was the only question I had. So.
Well, how are things in Indiana?
The same as always, I guess. Not great, not terrible.
And is everybody thrilled that Mike Pence is back?
Well, yeah. It's funny because everyone in Indiana didn't like Mike Pence until he became the vice president ticket, you know, running mate. So I don't understand. People are silly here.
Right. All right. Well, keep on keeping on. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Always great to hear from folks in Indiana. Very powerful state. Let's go next to JC from Brussels. JC, welcome to the program.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Did you hear that last year this data company called Morning Consult did a survey in a number of Western countries to see how much of the population had what they call the authoritarian personality? Have you heard of this?
Yes, I have. I don't remember what the results were, but I remember the survey.
Yes. It turns out that about 26% of Americans have highly authoritarian personalities.
Sounds about right.
Whereas only 6.7% of Germans do.
That's interesting.
That's quite a historical irony. I mean, Germany used to be the land of the Nazis, but now they are the most liberal country in the Western Hemisphere.
Is that true? Judged how?
Yes. If you go to the Wikipedia article for the authoritarian personality, all the data is there. And in most of the European countries, only 10% or so of the population is highly authoritarian.
Because there's other ways to evaluate it. Like I found another study here, which has Germany ninth in most left wing. And it says the most left wing countries are Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, Iceland, New Zealand, Switzerland, Canada, then Germany. Now, I think the difference is you're talking about a survey, I think, of the people, whereas this might be a survey more of what is government policy.
Well, okay, yeah, there was just 8 countries in that survey. Scandinavia was not part of it.
Oh, they didn't even include it. Well, that doesn't, if you're talking about the West, I think you must include Scandinavia, don't you think?
Yeah, but they only did 8 countries.
Okay.
But I think it's still, but you're right, Canada is pretty liberal.
Yeah. I mean, when there's almost 200 countries, to only look at 8 and say Germany's the most liberal seems a little narrow.
Yeah, it's true. But still, it's pretty scary how authoritarian America is.
Oh, it's horrifying.
Americans like to think of themselves as the great freedom-loving people, but the data says they're not. They're the most authoritarian people in the developed world.
Yeah, well, the American right is all about the freedom to live however you want, as long as it's okay with them.
Yeah, conformism.
Right. Well, okay, JC, thank you for the call. How's Brussels these days? One of my favorite cities in the world.
Oh, yeah. The weather's nice.
Right.
We got spared the worst of the heat wave.
Nice. Good. Well, I hope to get back there sooner than later.
Okay. See ya.
All right. See ya. JC, not that excited for my triumphant return to Belgium, but that's okay. That's okay. Let's go to Surya from New Jersey. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Is it Surya?
Yeah, that's pronounced right. I just have a question regarding. I'm currently in my third week of college, a freshman in college. So I wanted to ask something about college in general.
Sure,
like,
sure.
What do you think is like the impact, or what are your thoughts on the impact of like college students in in elections? Because I've seen a lot of things around, but I'm just wondering your specific thoughts.
Well, I think the impact is much smaller than it could be because many college students don't vote. You know, I think that it's a group that every election, there's these talking points that are repeated. If the youngest voters really turn out this time, it could be an incredible blowout for the left. And then, like, they never do. So I think that college age voters have the potential to be the decision makers in these elections if they actually turned out. But sadly, they have very low voter turnout, which is disappointing to me.
Yeah. So why do you think that's the case, though? Why do you think college voters are such turn out in such low numbers?
I mean, I think that there's a couple different things going on. For some people that age, they've only just become eligible to vote. So when things become habits, we tend to just do them more. It hasn't been a habit for a 19-year-old to vote. So they're not yet in that habit. And so they may not do it. Number two, I think there's a lot of disaffected people that age who don't necessarily feel as though voting is going to have an impact or the impact that they want on the world around them. That's number two. And then number three, people that age also have a lot of things going on. And so in a kind of a logistical sense, maybe it seems like more of an inconvenience to go and vote. I think it's a lot of different things.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
You're going to vote though, right?
Yeah, of course.
Good. All right, good. Well, good luck at college.
Thank you.
All right, very good. There's Surya from New Jersey with a beautiful question. Let's go to LJ from Vegas. LJ, welcome to the program.
Hey, David. How's it going?
It's going well.
Good. I kind of had a question for you, but I kind of had to set the stage if that's okay.
All right.
So kind of a comment I wanted to have is this kind of idea that the left is responsible for all cancel culture that is out there right now at the moment. I have a friend of mine. He's not a MAGA, you know, maggot, in other words. But he does lean more towards the right when it comes to his ideals of what the left actually represents, you know? And we have a lot of different discussions about how certain actors that he likes, certain people that he likes to follow and enjoys listening to, always seem to get yelled at by the left. And they always seem to be trying to be canceled. So my personal introspect and the things that I give to him in response to that is, hey, it's more accountability than it is canceling. Do you feel that these actions that this person, let's take, you know, someone who might sexually abuse somebody or someone who might do something that's incorrect in the limelight, right, and gets caught for it. Yeah. Do you feel that they're personally okay to come back and be accepted? And he says, absolutely, as long as they apologize for it. And I kind of want to get your idea of, like, what do you think is a good way to apologize for someone that has been, let's say, canceled, quote unquote?
Well, okay. So first of all, if you kill someone and then say, I'm sorry, I did it, you don't get out of the consequences, right? So let's, like, first, sometimes it's good to have, like, an extreme example to frame the conversation. So first of all, we all have to agree that certain bad acts have to be punished regardless of remorse, I think, right? And different people maybe would disagree on that. Once we get to that, take, for example, someone like, do you know who the chef Mario Batali is?
No, I don't.
He was like a TV chef and he had a big social media presence. And then he was accused, I hope I'm being correct here, he was accused of sexual harassment for when he was on a program, I think called The Chew. And then he basically disappeared from the social media space. And it's been years. And there was recently some trial. And let me see if I can even find the outcome so we can be accurate. Mario Batali trial. Like, he was basically canceled. Okay. He was found a few months ago not guilty of indecent assault and battery on Tuesday. So let's imagine he was canceled. How can he credibly kind of, like, come back? Well, I think there's a few components here. Number one, it's been a long enough period where it's plausible that he could say, even though I was exonerated legally for what happened, I feel terrible that I made anybody uncomfortable. I regret my actions. Here's what I've done. I now understand, you know, and so you put together all these things. It's like, okay, exoneration in a trial, and it's been a while, and he seems to understand what he did wrong. All right, well, it seems realistic and believable, and we can say, all right, let him start doing his cooking show again, or whatever the case may be, and we'll watch it. Contrast that with someone who's accused of something horrible, the next day goes, I'm sorry if people were offended, and now we're supposed to say, oh, yeah, that's totally cool. They're fine now in my book. No, it's not credible. It's not plausible. So I don't know that there's necessarily any sort of like checklist or playbook. But as people, we can look at situations and kind of figure out how we feel about particular situations and just like be reasonable people evaluating the world around us.
I can give you a specific one because I just pulled it up right now.
Okay.
We were discussing Andrew Tate.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you know who he is, right?
As well, I know too. Tate is like some kind of, I don't know. He's kind of I don't even know how to describe it. He's a guy who I guess had many relationships with women. I don't know.
I didn't want to learn about him, right? I was forcefully dragged into this conversation because he had been listening to Andrew Tate recently, and he's like, "Oh no, man! All he cares about is like the strength of men and a men's place in the world." And he was discussing all these things, and I'm just like holding my head, like, "Please stop!" Like, just
I can tell you, I don't know enough about that situation to really be able to comment intelligently.
Absolutely. And I don't want to give like a shortened version of it, right? But it was more of the fact that it's like, oh, Andrew Tate deleted all the videos where he's like being a comedian and he's just trying to make jokes. And I tried to explain to him that wouldn't be enough, right? That is not a admission of guilt. That's not an admission of that you had the wrong opinion.
I agree.
It's just deleting old stuff so you can stay on YouTube or whatever it is.
Yep, totally. Yeah, that's not credible. It doesn't seem substantive to me. I agree. Yeah, so I think the answer is, we all kind of intuitively know when these apologies are credible, and then we evaluate that.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
All right, LJ, thank you for the call. I appreciate everybody who called in. We will take calls again, but no more for today. We will take a quick break, and I'll see everybody very soon. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Friday mailbag. You can email in to info@davidpakman.com. Sometimes, in addition to emails, we'll feature a tweet, a Facebook message, a YouTube comment, something else. And I want to start today with a Facebook message. And one of the things every once in a while I try to do, it's a very dangerous thing to do, it's a very fraught thing to do. I will try to engage with a troll or just a nut. And last time I did this, it was an anti-vax person. And I actually said, hey, let's talk to them. Let's figure out how they came to believe the things they believe. And I asked some questions and it was all very weird and it went nowhere and we learned very little. I tried again the other day. This is someone that sent in a message via Facebook. Stanley said, we found fraud attached to you. You need to come clean with your listeners about your scam. So I wrote back, great, please send the information of fraud and we will come clean. No idea what you're talking about offhand. So they write back and they say, I'm sending it to the faculty license department. What's that? And then they said the FCC department. To which I explained, again, this is an experiment to see where it goes. I said, we aren't governed by the FCC. The FCC doesn't govern the internet. Let us know the fraud so that we can investigate. To which Stanley said, yes, you are. You're broadcasting, which fall in FCC regulations, and you're a subscriber channel as well, which falls into money's changing hands. And I said, money's changing hands is under the purview of the FTC, not the FCC. Can you let us know the fraud so we can investigate and correct it? To which I never heard back. So another exercise in the futility of trying to substantively engage with the trolls. Next email is from Patrick. Patrick is very angry with me. Patrick says, hi, David. I thought you were an independent thinker. I can't understand you praising Biden. He doesn't know who he is where he is or who his wife is. Surely you know this man is a threat to our country and should be impeached for the open borders alone. Now, remember, there has been essentially no change in border policy between Trump and Biden. Just we've stopped pretending that we're building a wall. That's the difference. Also, I'm sure you know, because you are smart, that he is being used as a puppet for Obama, Rice, and Klain. Very obvious. Actual people running the country. You are too young, but the Biden family has been corrupt over 40 years and should be prosecuted. Funny you never talk about the Biden laptop. You were better off supporting Bernie Sanders. Good luck. So this is like, it's got to be presented without comment because there's about a dozen things in there that don't make any sense. But this is someone who believes that they know a lot and that they're really smart. And this is what we're up against. How do you talk sense into someone like Patrick or DL? I don't know. They signed their email DL, even though it came from Patrick. It's very difficult to do. Dale wrote in and said, ouch, David, you just called Native Americans American Indians. Ouch. So listen, first of all, I didn't call them that. I was reading poll results and the poll referred to American Indians and Alaska Natives. Okay. I use whatever term I understand to be the correct term. There was a time about a decade ago when it was wrong to say American Indian and you were only supposed to say Native American. Now, if you Google it, increasingly, what you find is that either term is appropriate, Native American or American Indian. I have no preference one way or the other. I'm just using the terms that are being determined to be appropriate. But I was literally reading a poll. It wasn't a term I came up with, Dale. So see if you can relax a little bit on that. Lisa wrote in about watering times. We talked about restrictions on when you're allowed to water your lawn in different places. And Lisa said, David, on the bonus show, you talked about water use restrictions. You may find it interesting to know that in New Mexico, where it is hot and dry in the summer, we have restrictions on the time of day during which you are allowed to water your lawn or outdoor plants due to the rapid rate of evaporation during peak daylight hours, which leads to water waste. That makes a lot of sense. And I know so little about this that I didn't realize that some of the restrictions are based on that. But that makes a lot of sense. And many such examples of people writing in with comments like Lisa's. Josh wrote in about my interview with Republican Mike Cargill. And Josh said, hey, David, how do we know Mike Cargill isn't the demon possessed one? Prior to your interviews with him, I didn't believe in demon possession, but surely a demon possessed person would sound exactly like Mike Cargill. Where do they find these people? It is beyond me. That interview with Mike Cargill triggered such a reaction from the audience. If you haven't seen it, check it out. He tells us who he believes are the demon possessed people. It's mostly blacks and Jews that he names, which I pointed out to him. It's a wild interview. And it is shocking that folks like this exist. It really is. It was eye opening, for lack of a better term. Mika wrote in and said, hey, David, I was thinking about the story that Fred Trump was humored into believing he still ran the Trump Organization when he had Alzheimer's, how he went to the office every day to sign blank papers and talk to a decoy secretary, now knowing that Donald Trump kept those classified documents, argued they belonged to him, refused to give them back, even kept some of them in his desk. It's almost like props to play president. On top of all the rightful president stolen election future reinstatement nonsense, the parallel is amusing. How much of the narrative is grift and how much is delusion? I used to think all grift, but I'm not sure anymore. Regards, Mika. Yeah, it's a good question. I made this analogy earlier in the week. The idea of Trump in a sort of Truman Show, similar to his own father when his father had Alzheimer's. At this point, I don't even pretend to know. I genuinely don't know how much is grift and how much is delusion, but it seems as though it's not 100% either. It's some mix of the two. I got an email about Latinx. David, I heard your explanation of why Latinx is imposed by white progressives and that it is not used by Latino and Latina people. while that may be the case within your circles, the use of the ending with X is a way for queer folk of romantic languages to express and address each other. You can see that in the US with the onset of MX to replace Mr. and Mrs. Full disclosure, I am a queer white progressive. However, within my social media circles and physical spaces, people of all origins, Filipino, European, South America, Latinx is commonplace because even Latino, Latina is exclusive. I would be curious if you have any statistical data to back up your view on the term. I can only speak from my experience. Yeah, I mean, when you actually look at surveys of Latinos, for example, there's a 2019 survey, National Survey of Latinos, found only 3% of, and again, here, you can use whatever term you want to use, Hispanics, Latinos, only 3% of Hispanics slash Latinos have ever, ever, ever used the term Latinx. Ever. 3% of Latinos, okay? The League of United Latin American Citizens announced in 2021, they're going to stop using Latinx because almost all Latinos don't like it and don't use it. So it is widely documented that almost no actual Latino folks use Latinx. By the way, you should see there's this whole other thing. I don't even know that I want to get into this, but there's this whole other thing where in Spanish, words are gendered in that, for example, if we talk about the word friends, which the singular is amigo, okay? The plural would be amigos or amigas. If you say amigos, it's either a group of male friends or a mixed group, men and women. If you say amigas with an A, it's understood that it's a group of female friends. This is the language, okay? This exists in, you know, French. That this is the way it is in Spanish. There's a new thing that has come up, which is they replace, instead of an O or an E, the neutral, I'm sorry, I just said that wrong. Instead of an O or an A, you instead use an E. So instead of amigos or amigas, it's amigues. And it is another thing which I don't do, and which is similar to Latinx that has started to sort of pervade the language. And anyway, maybe a topic for another day. But there's my data, those two studies that I cited. Next email from Sonia. Sonia is really angry that I said I'm not a cat guy. It's not a big deal. Some people aren't badger people. Some people aren't into rhinos. Some people are against hippos. Sorry, now I got confused. Sonia says, David, sir, love the show, proud subscriber. You are educated, articulate, and astute. It's refreshing to watch your show and know without a doubt that like-minded progressives still exist. But I lost some respect for you when you recently said you don't like cats. There is a rule amongst cat lovers that says if you meet a person who doesn't like cats, run the other way. I ascribe to this in my personal relationships, but it will certainly not deter me from your show. You may think of me as a crazy cat lady, she says she's 60, but I've loved cats and all animals my entire life. You're a father now. You never know what surprises are in store. I hope that one day you will be blessed with the love of a cat. Listen, this is not, I don't hate cats. I don't advocate violence against cats. I'm just not a cat guy. You know, I like dogs. I like, zebras, I don't know. I'm just not a cat guy. It's not a big deal. And no offense to anybody that owns cats. Jared said, hey, David, wanted to message you to say thanks for your finance section on your website. I picked up a couple of the books. I'm in my final semester of college. Don't know much about finance, but the selection you provided looked perfect. Just wanted to say thanks. Yeah, listen, if you want my list of recommendations for personal finance books, you can find it at davidpakman.com/finance. Many such people have found it interesting. Jonathan wrote in, and Jonathan says, hey, David, you mentioned on a call that colleges are prepared to pay handsomely for conservatives like Ben Shapiro, but not for progressives. That doesn't fit with the image of colleges being heavily skewed to the left. You know, postmodernist, Marxist, blah, blah. What have I missed? Yeah, listen. Without delving at all into the academic biases of colleges, what I can tell you is most of the speakers that go to college campuses and are paid by groups, not by the college itself. It's not like the Department of Poli-Sci pays for Ben Shapiro to go speak at a school. And the on-campus right-wing groups are way better funded. You know, there's these groups, Students for Liberty, and I'm making that up. There's a dozen or so groups. The groups are way better funded on the right than on the left. And so that's why, in my experience, the money is way better for right-wing campus speakers than for left-wing campus speakers. My experience, and I'm glad to be pointed in a different direction. You can email in info@davidpakman.com if you have something to say. And remember, 9/19, September 19th, we have a fantastic one-day membership special that we will be doing. If you have been thinking, maybe I'll get a membership, I don't know, sounds interesting, get on my newsletter at davidpakman.com. And then on the Monday of September 9th, on the morning of September 19th, you will get a beautiful email telling you how to sign up at a historically, humiliatingly low price. All right, see you then.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
Down on
WRCT in sound from way out.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The empire has gone down and down and down because they did in the past do many bad things to the people of the world. But we are mourning Queen, because Queen is a person, a human being.
As the world marks the death of Queen Elizabeth II, not all her subjects throughout the former British Empire are mourning her death equally. We'll speak with Professor Mukama Wa Ngugi, son of the world-renowned Kenyan author Ngugi Wa Thiong'o. His deaf uncle was shot by British soldiers and says colonialism happened to real people. It is absolute madness to expect us to mourn the Queen. We'll also speak with Harvard history professor Caroline Elkins, author of Legacy of Violence, A History of the British Empire, and the Pulitzer Prize-winning book Imperial Reckoning, The Untold Story of Britain's Gulag in Kenya, which helped lead to reparations for more than 5,200 surviving Kenyans subjected to systematic torture under British rule. Then, the family of Carl Dorsey, an unarmed black man killed by New Jersey police New Year's Day 2021, has filed a civil lawsuit against the officer, the Newark Police Department, and the city of Newark.
We filed a lawsuit seeking damages under what's called Section 1983 of the United States Code, which says that when an officer acting under color of state law or federal law takes a life, uses excessive force, unnecessary force, then he can be held liable for damages.
With Carl Dorsey's sister, then tens of thousands in the majority black city of Jackson, Mississippi, now have their water restored for the first time in weeks, but it's brown that's coming out of the taps. As Republican Governor Tate Reeves says privatization is on the table for the Jackson water system, we'll speak with reporter Judd Legum about how the multi-billion dollar corporation Siemens already helped create the water crisis.
This is a company that came to the city of Jackson offering solutions. They said if the city signed a $90 million contract, the largest in its history, it could not only solve a lot of the problems with its water system, but it could generate more revenue and help improve the entire water system over time. But that contract turned out to be a disaster. The company never delivered on its promises, and it made the situation much, much worse.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Ukrainian forces have regained control of almost all of the Kharkiv region in the northeast of Ukraine after launching a counteroffensive against Russia. Russia's defense ministry has acknowledged pulling troops from the city of Izium and other parts of the region. Ukraine's claiming it's recaptured 20 towns and villages over the past 24 hours, but millions were left without power and water Sunday after Russia bombed key civilian infrastructure facilities in the Kharkiv and Donetsk regions. The New York Times reports the United States played a key role in helping Ukraine launch the counteroffensive via intelligence gathering and training. One former Obama official said, quote, "These guys have been trained for 8 years by special ops." Over the weekend, Ukraine's foreign minister, Dmytro Kuleba, called for allies to send more weapons.
We showed that we can defeat the Russian army. We're doing it with weapons which were also provided by our partners. I repeat again, the more weapons we receive, the faster we win. The faster this war will end, and we would be able to concentrate on other goals.
This comes as Ukraine has shut down the last operating reactor at Zaporizhia, the largest nuclear power plant in Europe, amidst fears that fighting near the Russian